Morning, everybody. Today's daf is daf Kuf Lamed Hey. We're on daf Kuf Lamed Dalet. We're on the back end of Kuf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, and we are in the middle of the discussion of the mitzvah of the Mila. We are still in Paragraph Laws of the Mila. We'll be here for a couple more days. And we are discussing some details regarding the actual mitzvah of Mila itself. Really, the discussion started in terms of the specifics of Mila on the bottom of Kuf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, where there the Mishnah goes through those activities which can override the Shabbos. And from there, the Gemara segues into a discussion of more details regarding the mitzvah of Mila in general. Yesterday's daf included a lot of medical advice. Abaye provided a lot of traditions that he received from his foster mother regarding what should be done in terms of the remedies and the therapies of the baby. And that was all the Amud Aleph of Kuf Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph. And then we started the Mishnah yesterday on Kuf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis. And the Mishnah talked about taking care of the baby after the Mila. It's post-op. So after an operation, there has to be care to be taken to the child to make sure that the baby makes a full recovery. Hot water is necessary. They would wash the wound with the hot water. And presumably, which is going to be our first discussion of the day, they're going to wash the baby with the hot water itself. And so this was necessitated because of the care and the consideration of the baby. The baby is right now in a critical condition, post-op. So therefore, you're allowed to heat up the water. That's what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah, that you can heat up the water. Now, there is the Mishnah is subject to interpretation because the Mishnah is not very clear. It's slightly ambiguous in terms of what exactly you're allowed to do for that baby. I'm sorry. In terms of when are you, exactly how do you wash that baby? So the Mishnah started off by saying marchitz and a sakatan. This is just all review of yesterday. Marchitz and a sakatan bein lifnei mila bein lachar mila, that you can wash the baby before and after the mila. And then the Mishnah goes on to describe zilof, sprinkling the baby. So what's going on? Does the Mishnah allow you to wash the baby or just zilof? So that was subject to a debate, and the Gemara yesterday offered two interpretations of what the Mishnah meant. The first interpretation is Rav Yehuda and Rava bar Ravua, who both say that what the Tanakhama says is that the only thing you're allowed to do is you're allowed to do zilof. You can only sprinkle, and even though the Mishnah says the word marchitzim, but that doesn't, don't get caught up with that. You're only allowed to sprinkle the baby, as opposed to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in the Mishnah, who argues, says that you can wash the baby. That's one interpretation. The second interpretation of the Mishnah is offered by... Second interpretation is offered by Rava. Rava says that according to the Tanakhama, you could wash the baby. You could wash the baby on day one. You could wash the baby on day two. Baby's in critical condition, but you can't wash the baby on day three. On day three, all you're going to do is just sprinkle on the baby, but you can't actually wash the baby. That's what the Tanakhama meant. And Rav Elazar ben Azariah in the Mishnah is arguing on the Tanakhama, and he maintains that even on the third day, you're allowed to wash the baby. Okay? Which interpretation of the Mishnah is the correct interpretation? Correct. That's not the right way to say it, but which one is the more accepted one? So although Rava felt that, according to his interpretation, that would mean that everyone agrees that on day one and day two you could wash the baby, and in fact, he did so, but then the Gemara tells a story where he got sick. In other words, after washing the baby, he himself got sick, he suffered, and he regretted that he was so public on his ruling that you're allowed to wash the baby on days one and two, and he felt that maybe Rav Yehuda would be more accurate. The Gemara notes yesterday, what about the fact that there's a braisa that supports the pshat of Rava? So to that the Gemara says, okay, there might be a braisa, but the Mishnah sounds a lot more like the pshat offered by Rav Yehuda. Okay, that is all a recap of what we saw yesterday, and we are continuing the Gemara, ki asa Rav Dimi. No, we did that already, and just a little bit below that, right? Ibai lehu, right? Kira kiyasa Rav Dimi. Yeah, no, that's it. Perfect. Okay, good. Okay, it's 2/3 down in the Yama. The first word in the line is Omer Marchitzin, and now it's a continuation of this discussion of bathing. Kiyasa Rav Dimi, Amar Rabbi Lazar, Halacha Rav Lazar ben Azariah. Good. So first of all, the halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, that you're allowed to wash the baby. Not only are you allowed to wash the baby on day one and two, but you're even allowed to wash the baby on day three as well. So that means if the Mila was on Thursday, so that you could wash the baby on Friday, and if necessary, you could wash the baby on Shabbos. Now when I say wash the baby, as the Gemara is about to point out, That means even heat the water up on Shabbos itself. Let's wait just a moment. The Gemara is going to make that very point. Havu ba b'marav. Now in Eretz Yisrael, they wanted to know, harchatzas kol gufa or harchatzas mila? Question goes as follows. Look, we now know that we have a dispensation, a heter, to wash the baby on Shabbos. Does that mean the wound or the entire baby? So how may Rabban Rav Yaakov Shmei Mistaba harchatzas kol gufo? So the Gemara quotes one Amara, and he says, I think it means the entire body. The East Agadah harchatzas mila migara mechamen agabe maka. Gemara says, because look, if all we're discussing right now is just pouring hot water on the wound and not the rest of the baby, so then there's no chiddush whatsoever. Meaning then the Mishnah is not telling us anything that we don't already know. Meaning, if you have a wound on Shabbos, you can pour hot water on that wound. Because the opinion of Rav, which as we'll see in a moment, is debatable, but the opinion of Rav is that you could pour hot water directly on the wound on Shabbos. So if...
I'm sorry, about heating
the water. Okay, perfect, perfect. Just wait. You're one step ahead. Just wait one second. So the Gemara says, okay, so you see from Rav that you could pour hot water in a wound. And apparently Rav says, if Rav is saying it, it's got to be a universal truth. Well, if it's a universal truth, so then what's our Mishnah teaching us? So it must be that our Mishnah is teaching us an extra chiddush, which is that you could wash the entire baby. So Maskev Rav Yosef, L'shanilach min chamin shuchma b'shabbos, l'chamin shuchma me'erev shabbos. Now, Phil, the Gemara is going to make your point. Wow, how can you compare those two rulings? The ruling of Rav is talking about water which was already heated before Shabbos. So there, we're not talking about any chil Shabbos whatsoever. All we're discussing is just whether or not you're allowed to pour water, hot water on a wound on Shabbos. Now, why would it be prohibited? In fact, right, why would you have thought it should be prohibited? And the answer is going to be refuah. Because we know that on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do any type of medicinal practice. If the care is not critical, so you can't perform medicinal practices. So I might have thought that pouring hot water directly on the wound would be a violation of refuah. Rav says it's not. But we're not talking about heating up the water on Shabbos in general. Here, however, regarding the baby, the license is to heat the water on Shabbos. So, Maskev Rav Dimi, Mamai Dach, Bechamish Uchma B'Shabbos Pligi. Dilma Bechamish Uchma B'er Shabbos Pligi. The Gemara says, how do you know that? Maybe over here, the whole discussion is with water that was heated before Shabbos. Amar Abaye. So Abaye says, I was waiting on this one. Meaning for me, this was a nice fastball, right down the plate. I was waiting on this one. By the Ishnale, I wanted to answer this question. The Kim Vishanale Rav Yosef. But Rav Yosef jumped in front of me and he gave the answer before me. But the truth of the matter is, Abaye is saying, as I really would have given the same answer. Mimnesha Sakanu Hulo. What do you mean? Of course we're talking about heating the water on Shabbos. The baby's condition right now is critical. The baby's in critical care. He just had a mila. So of course what we're discussing over here is not whether or not you can pour hot water on the wound. That's a given. What we're talking about over here is heating the water up on Shabbos. It marnami ki asa rabin amar rabbi abau amar rabbi lazar amila amar rabbi abau amar rabbi yochan halacha ki rabbi lazar ben azariah. So again, another stock statement of the Gemara. First of all, the halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. We've heard that already once this morning. Bein b'chamish uchma b'shabbos, bein b'chamish uchma me'erev Shabbos. But here, this statement is very clear. Whether the water was heated before Shabbos or whether the water was heated on Shabbos. Bein achatzos kol gufo, bein achatzos mila. Mimnesha sakani hilal. And it does not matter if we're just washing the wound or washing the entire body. Both of them would be okay because it's a sakana towards the child. Gemara rules very clearly, very decisively, that one is allowed to heat up water on Shabbos for the baby. One is allowed to wash not only the wound, but the entire baby, as well in this hot water, because it's a sakana. And by any sakana, and when we say sakana, we mean critical care, meaning the baby's life is in danger. So therefore, you're allowed to do these types of activities even on Shabbos. Gufa, we're continuing the Gemara. Now, we did mention this just a moment ago, where Rav says that if you have a wound on Shabbos, you can pour hot water on the wound. Okay. Now, we're not talking about the baby anymore. We're not talking about critical care anymore. We're talking about just simply a wound. A person's got a cut. a laceration or some sort of abrasion, and he wants to pour hot water on the area in order to clean it, and we're not talking about the permission to heat up the water on Shabbos, because it's not a sakana. It's just simply that he already has hot water, and can he pour hot water on the wound? So Rav says yes, and Rav says not only yes, but directly on the wound, that would be fine. Now Shmuel disagrees. And Shmuel says no, that the only thing that you could do is you could pour it indirectly on the wound, but you can't pour it directly on the wound. Meaning, again, the issue over here is an issue of refuah, that we're not allowed to do any type of medicinal practices on Shabbos. So, for whatever reason, Rav believes that in this case it's okay, for reasons which, whatever they may be, in other words, whatever the svar is behind Rav, I don't know if I have a good svar yet, but Shmuel says no. Shmuel says that that's practicing medicine that you're not allowed to do, so what you could do is in an indirect fashion, pour the water on a body limb, have the water run over the wound. The Gemara challenges with the following braisa. The braisa here says that you're not allowed to put hot water on top of a cloth or anything absorbent in order to put on the wound on Shabbos. So the Gemara wants to deduce from this braisa. You know what the braisa is trying to tell us? That you can pour the water directly on the wound. The Gemara says, Hasam, no. No, that braisa has nothing to do with the issue of refuah. Hasam ishum schita. No, that braisa has a whole different consideration. And that braisa is worried about the fact that if I pour water on a cloth, I'm going to end up squeezing the cloth. That's the concern of the braisa. This is not, the braisa here is not bothered by refuah. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, how about the following braisa? Einosin chamin v'shemin agabe moch shal agabe makeh b'shabbos. One is not allowed to put neither hot water or oil on a cloth, which then is going to be applied to a makeh on Shabbos. And again, the Gemara says, same story. The Gemara says, that's a schita consideration. That's not a refuah consideration. We're worried that if you put water on a cloth, you're going to squeeze the cloth. But that has nothing to do with our discussion. And then the Gemara notes that we have a braisa that follows the position of Shmuel. Again, we have a machlokas here between Rav and Shmuel, whether or not you can pour hot water not heated on Shabbos, hot water that was heated before Shabbos, whether or not you can pour the hot water directly on the wound on Shabbos. Here the braisa writes, Ein nosin chamin v'shemin al gabe makeh b'shabbos. Aval nosin chutz makeh v'shoses v'yorei lamakeh. One is not allowed to put hot water and oil on a wound on Shabbos, but what you can do is apply it to another body limb or an adjacent area on the body. Let the hot water run over the wound on Shabbos. The braisa here clearly goes like Shmuel, which is interesting. That's really the end of the discussion. It's interesting. Normally, when it comes to Isser, the halacha falls like Rav. When it comes to Mamonos, the halacha falls like Shmuel. But in this case, we have a braisa that very clearly supports the position of Shmuel. So I'd venture to say the halach here falls like Shmuel. Tanu Rabban Nosin Agabe Hamaka Moch Yavesh V'Sfog Yavesh. The Gemara here speaks now about other ways of caring for cuts and lacerations. You can take a dry cloth or a dry sponge and apply it to a wound. Avalo Gemi Yavesh, but do not put a Gemi. Gemi is something, it's like rubber, but rubber is not a good way. Like palm branch. Reed, velo ketitin yevashin, and not ketitin as well, rags. Kasha ketitin not ketitin. Now the Gemara notes the braisa over here somewhat contradicts itself, because the braisa starts off by saying that one of the things that you can put on the wound is a moch, and then the braisa says, oh, but don't put ketitin on. It's basically the same thing. What's the difference? Lo kasha habachadati habaatike. So the Gemara says we're talking about a new rag and an old rag. I know the word rag usually means old, but the Gemara says the difference is between a new rag and an old rag. Rashi explains that by a new rag is beneficial for a cut, placing it right on top of the cut, it helps, it heals. An old rag is not going to be good. So habachadati habatike amar Abai shmamina haniketita masu. So Abai says, from this answer that we just provided the braisa, you learn some general advice, and that is that new rags are very good for cuts, and you can apply a new rag towards you should apply a new rag towards the cut in order to help it heal. Oh, it could be. It could be. Possibly. Safek ve'androgynous. And now we move on to the next part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah, at the very top of the Amud, talked about what you're allowed to do for the baby and that is heat up water, wash the baby, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, which is a halacha, even if it's the third day after the mila, you can do so. Okay. And then the Mishnah talked about a suffix and an androgynous. Now, what a suffix is, we went through Rashi yesterday, we're going to go through it basically again today, and an androgynous is somebody who is both, has male and female genitalia. Tanu Rabbanan arlasov adedoches haShabbos velo suffik doches haShabbos. So the Gemara here quotes the Brayta, and the Brayta here goes back to the pasuk in Parshas Tazria. The pasuk says Vayiba Yom Hashmini Yomolus Pesar arlaso, that on the eighth day you have to circumcise the Pesar arlaso, his flesh. And the Gemara here now darshans that when it says arlaso, it means it has to be definitive. We have to know that's a vadai in arlaso vadai, a definitive arla, but not a suffix. V'lo suffix dochis haShabbos, arlaso vadai dochis haShabbos, v'lo androgynous dochis haShabbos. And similarly, it also has to be a definitive male. In other words, if it's not a definitive male, if it has both male and female gender, so then you cannot do the bris on Shabbos. Well, of course, what's clearly intended over here is that you're going to do a bris. It's just that it's not enough of a vadai. It's not definitive enough where it's going to override the Shabbos. You only can override the Shabbos if you know for sure you have the mitzvah of mila. The Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, androgynous doches haShabbos. Now, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees on the androgynous. Rabbi Yehuda says that vis-a-vis the androgynous, that it does override the Shabbos. V'anos kares. And the punishment of an androgynous who does not receive a mila is going to be that of kares, meaning, according to Rav Yehuda, androgynous is a man. Okay, a complicated man, but nevertheless, androgynous is a man requiring a bris mila. And so therefore, two considerations. Number one, according to Rav Yehuda, it will override the Shabbos if the eighth day of this baby falls on Shabbos. And two, is that later in life, if he doesn't receive a mila, he'll be subject to the punishment of kares. The Brisa continues, and the Brisa points out, what if the baby's born ben hashmashos? That means the baby's born late Friday afternoon, and it is during the ben hashmashos period. When exactly is the ben hashmashos period? So that's subject to a machlokas. But right now, let's just say it simply, let's call it somewhere around 13 minutes after the sun sets. So now we're in this limbo period, this twilight period, where we don't know if it's day or if it's night. So obviously it's because of the possibility that it's Shabbos, we're not allowed to do malacha once the Ben HaShemashos period begins. But if the baby is born during this Ben HaShemashos period, so we don't know. Was this baby born on Friday or was this baby born on Shabbos? Answer is, it's a suffix. We don't know. So now you move fast forward a week from now to the next Shabbos. It's possible that it's the eighth day for the baby, but it's possible that Shabbos is the ninth day from the birth of the baby, because maybe the birth is on Friday. So we cannot do the mila on Shabbos because it has to be a vadai. It cannot be a suffix. You can't do it on Friday because the baby might not have been born on Friday. If the baby may have been born on Shabbos, Friday would only be the seventh day. So when the mila is going to be pushed off to Sunday. Our loss of vade dochas haShabbos, but that's a good clarification. Our loss of vade dochas haShabbos alone no la kishuhu mohol. And what if the baby is born mohol with no arla? Okay, it happened in our community some 6 years ago, 7 years ago. It happens. A baby is born without an arla. So v'lo nola kishumal dochis haShabbos. She beishamay omrim zarech lahatif mimenu dam bris. Look, beishamay says that even though the baby is not born without an arla, but there has to be a tafas dam bris. There has to be some drawing of blood according to beishamay. Ubeisilo omrim eino zarech. And beisilo says it's not necessary. Meaning, baby is born without an arla, you don't have to do anything, not even a tafas dam bris. That's one version of the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel regarding what do you do when the baby is born mahol. Am Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar lo nechluk Beis Shammai Beis Hillel al nola kishu mahol shetzarech letaf mimena dam bris. Now, a second version of the machlokas of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, again, this gets where it gets complicated, meaning we have a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and then we have a later machlokas in terms of what exactly the machlokas was of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. According to the second version of the machlokas, the one offered by Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, everybody agrees, both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agree, that there must be a tafas dam bris, mimnei she'arla kavusha, because even though the arla may not be visible, but it's there. Where is it? The Gemara describes it as Arla Kavusha. It's like a suppressed Arla. So there is some Arla, so therefore you have to do some sort of drawing of blood. The question is, what happens when the convert is converted and he is already had a Mila? And here we have a Machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, whether or not there needs to be a Tafas Dambris, a drawing of the blood, for a Ger who already was circumcised for whatever reason beforehand. Okay, that is a long brisa, and what we're going to be doing for the rest of today and tomorrow is dissecting various points of the brisa. So let's begin with the first part of the brisa. Amar v'lo safik dochas haShabbos. A suffix does not override the Shabbos. What does that mean? Meaning, it's not the Menashmash's case because the Brisa spells it out. It's not the Androgynous case because the Brisa spells it out. So what does that mean, the baby's a suffix? What suffix are we talking about? Lasuya Mai? Lasuya Hadatan Rabbanan. So the Gemara puts it alongside the Brisa we just learned, together with this Brisa. Ben Shiva, Mechalan Alav Es HaShabbos. Uben Ches, Ein Mechalan Alav Es HaShabbos. We've gone over this fact a number of times, but it's always good to review. So the gestation period of a baby is 9 months. Okay, you came to the daf to learn that the gestation period of a baby is 9 months. Okay, good. Look, even the most straightforward things. You know the word, the Gemara says it's anida, the word herayon, which is a reference to conception. So in Gematria, and I'm not a Gematria guy, you probably figured that out, but the Gemara says that the Gematria of Herayon is 271, and how long is the gestation period of a baby, of a normal baby? So 271 days, 270 divided by 30 is 9. That would be 9 months. I understand there's an extra day, but okay. So 271. Anyway, that's good. That's the normal gestation. Huh?
How are you able to
Okay, we'll get to that in just a second. So that's a normal gestation. So the baby's fully gestated, 9 months, and it comes out. So you know it's a viable baby. Now there's also another formula for producing a baby, and that is a 7 month gestation period. So the baby comes out early, premature, within the 7th month. So that also is considered a fully formed baby. And then, oddly enough, the 8th month baby does not survive. Does not. Now, okay, you'll give me facts and information, statistics that the 8 month babies are doing great today, and I'll accept and I'll acknowledge it. You're right, right. But in the time of the Mishnah, the time of the Gemara, baby comes out 8 months, and that's it. The baby is not going to be a viable baby. It's a stillborn. Even if when the baby comes out, the baby may be breathing and there may be a pulse, but nevertheless, it's a stillborn. In fact, today's daf we're going to learn together that it's so not viable that on Shabbos, if this baby were coming on Shabbos, the baby would be mupsa. That's what we're going to learn in today's daf. So now nowadays things have changed. I need not even say it, but I'll say it. Nowadays, nishtanu ateva, nature has changed, and the 8 month gestated baby is doing great. And obviously, nowadays, bizmanenu, if a woman was delivering on the 8 month, not only will we take care of the mother, but we take care of the baby as well. But I'm just putting all this together so that we understand the Gemara. So here, if the baby comes out on the 7th month, so that means it's a fully formed baby, perfectly gestated and developed. And so therefore you do the Mila of such baby on Shabbos. If the baby, however, is born on the 8th month after conception, so then the baby is not the Gemara's terminology, it's an Evan Balma, so you don't do the Mila on Shabbos. It's interesting. It sounds like from the Gemara that after Shabbos you'll do a Mila, meaning the mitzvah Mila is still to be performed, but just not on Shabbos. Okay, towards your question in terms of how do we know, so they basically, not much has changed over the years. They work based on the menstrual cycle of the woman in order to determine when exactly the baby was conceived, more or less. In other words, you probably circumcise the baby before they die. I mean, that's our minhag. Our minhag is to do that. So the Brisa now is talking about a suffix. Ben Shiva Mechan Lavas HaShabbos, Ben Ches Mechan Lavas HaShabbos. Suffix Ben Zayin, Suffix Ben Ches. Now here, let's say we don't know. In other words, the mother did not have a good record in terms of when exactly the conception was. So she was not exactly sure whether this is the seventh or eighth month. So here, we cannot, we are not mechalin alav es haShabbos. Now that does not mean, just to be clear. In other words, obviously because it's possible that the baby is going to be a viable baby, what we'll do, of course, is we'll take care of the baby. It just simply means that the bris milah of such a baby is not going to override the Shabbos. Because again, the only way I could do a bris on Shabbos is if I know for sure, if I am absolute about the fact that there's a mitzvah of milah, because this baby is an eight-month baby, possibly there may not be a mitzvah of milah. And if there's no mitzvah of milah, so then I cannot override the Shabbos. Ben shmona harehu ke'even v'asur l'taltalau. Aval ima shocho minikaso mimnei asakana. If the baby comes out in the eighth month, it is like a stone, this baby. You cannot move the baby. It's moksa. And the only thing mom can do is mom can nurse using the baby. Not for the sake of the baby. The baby's dead. If not now, in the immediate future, but for the sake of the mother. The mother right now is lactating, and the mother needs to express, and so what she could do is she could basically use the baby in order to express her milk, because it's a danger to the mother. It's interesting, Tosfos at the very bottom notes that it's a little bit challenging over here that the Gemara says the words mimnei asakana, that mom can nurse because it's a danger to mom, meaning over here, what are we talking about? We're talking about expressing milk from her so that she relieves her discomfort. That is, let's think this through, that's a malacha she'ina tzricha lagufa. Right? Agreed? You don't have to, but you can disagree. But it is. Meaning because a malacha she'ina, because the malacha is when you're extracting, when you're expressing is I'm removing the liquid from its source because I want the liquid. Here, she's only removing the liquid from her body because she doesn't want the liquid. She's bloated. She's got too much. So over here, it's a malacha shein tzrich legufa. So, and let's assume that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. The malacha shein tzrich legufa is an issa derabbanan. So what did we learn earlier in the Masechta? And just a couple days ago, a couple weeks ago, we learned this as well, that if for a malacha shein tzrich legufa, and there's pain involved, tsa'ar, so that's all you need in order to allow a person to malach shein tzrich legufa. Remember how we discussed if the person has a pimple or some abscess, so they can relieve it on Shabbos if it's painful. Why? Because again, it's only malach shein tzrich legufa, and because it's painful, so therefore she can express. So Tosfos is just wondering, he's curious, why the Gemara over here says mimnei sakana, it's a danger to the mother. You don't even need such a high threshold of critical care. It could be that it's just simply painful, and that would be license enough for the mother to express the milk from her body. Anyway, that's Tosfos's point. I'm just delivering the message. Yes.
Why did the Gemara use the example 7 and 8? More common
than 8 and 9. It's a fair question. I don't know. I don't know why. It's a good question. Yes.
He's considered the baby at 8 months old. But what about Tumah and other stuff doesn't apply until what?
Yeah. In other words, right. In other words, the baby's not a. What is the baby actually considered a mace as it emerges? I doubt it. I would strongly doubt it, but I'm not absolute about it. Itmar the Gemara now on this issue of a tafas d'ambris. Itmar Rav Amar Halacha Ketanakama Ushmul Amar Halacha Kerebi Shimon Ben Elazar. So we have over here differing opinions between the Amoraim and the Machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, whether or not you do a bris. In other words, what's the case? The case over here now is a baby that comes out already gemalt, already circumcised, and the question now becomes, do I do the milah? Now there's actually two layers of questions. A, do we do a milah at all? Okay, and B, if I do a milah, now when I say milah, by the way, there's nothing to mal. In other words, the oil is not there. Meaning, but do I extract blood? Hatafas is dam bris. Do I do a milah on Shabbos? Okay, there really are two layers of questions. But anyway, according to Rav, the halachas follows like the Tanakama, and Shmuel says the halachas like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Okay, now we're set up for the following story. Terrible story, but Gemara tells it to us and therefore we relay it. Rav Ada bar Ava yisad le'ahu yenuka kishu umal. So Rav Ada bar Ava had a baby born to him, and the baby was born without an arla. So the baby was born. Already mahul. Ahadre atleisa mohale adeshavi kroshavcha. Now what he did is he went around town and he asked every moel in order whether or not they could do a tafas dambris. And as Rashi points out, this occurred on Shabbos. And as Rashi explains, all the moelim refused to do it. Because even though there may be a requirement to do a tafas dambris, but not on Shabbos, so, and even who Beit Shammai, who says that you need to do a tafas dambris, but that's only because of a safek. But in other words, you cannot override the Shabbos in order to do a tafas dambris. So all the moelim refused. So what did he do? Unfortunately, he took matters into his own hands. And yeah, correct. I mean it over here as literal as I can. He took the matter into his own hand, and he mutilated his own baby. Amar, and he understood how this all worked min hashamayim. Tasi li de avrei adarav. Now, magiali, meaning I deserved it. Because on this machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, I thought that the halacha was going to follow like Shmuel. Now, why he thought that, it's so interesting. First of all, Rav Ada bar Ava was a student of Rav. Right? He was not a student of Shmuel. And also, this is not Mamanos, this is Issa V'Heter. So, and normally the halacha follows like Rav and Issa V'Heter. So why he didn't follow like Rav, it's somewhat of a mystery to me. But he understood. In other words, Rav was of the opinion that you do not need to do a tafas dambris. And he was so, he felt so strongly that the halacha does not follow like Rav, but rather like Shmuel. And therefore he insisted in doing a tafas dambris, even on Shabbos. Which, by the way, Shmuel wouldn't even agree to that. Shmuel would only say do the tafas dambris after Shabbos, but not on Shabbos itself. None of the moelim in the community would want to do it because it's Shabbos. So he took matters into his hands, but now he says, now I get it. Now I understand. I deserved it because I violated the ruling of Rav. I'm the Rav Nachman Baj Shmuel Lo'avar. And now the Gemara points out, look, you think you just violated Rav? Right? You did worse. You violated Shmuel as well. Amen, Damar Shmuel Bechol. Because even when Shmuel says that you do Adafas Dambris, that's only during the week. Bishabbos Mi'amar, but he doesn't say it on Shabbos. So a double reprimand for Rav Ada Ba'ava, not only violating the ruling of Rav, but violating the ruling of Shmuel as well. Now, in defense, I mean, it's very hard to defend what Rav Ada Ba'ava did. But in his defense, the Gemara notes, he didn't understand Shmuel that way. He thought that according to Shmuel, you do a tafas dambris, and even on Shabbos. Hu savar vandai arla kavushahi. He thought that as a no-brainer, there is for sure an arla there. It's not visible to the naked eye. It's a suppressed arla. But you, in other words, there's an arla there, which means that you have to do a bris. Meaning, as we quote in the beginning of today's daf, arla so, there's an arla there, you have to do a bris, and even on Shabbos. De'itmar. And the Gemara notes that this debate between Rav Ada bar Ava and all those who disagreed with him is actually another machlokas between Rabba and Rav Yosef. De'itmar Rabba, amar chayshin etcham arla kavushahi. Rabba's of the opinion that we concern ourselves with the fact that there may be a suppressed arla. But read carefully what Rava says. Chayshinon. We're only concerned that there's a suppressed arla, but we don't know for sure. Rav Yosef, Amar Vada arla kavushahi. And Rav Yosef disagrees. Rav Yosef says, no. It is not a question as to whether or not there's a suppressed arla. We know there's a suppressed arla. Amar Rav Yosef, mina aminala. D'tanya, Rav Yosef says, and look, I'm going to prove to you. I'm going to show you that I'm correct. Because Rabbi Elazar Kafar Omer, because here we have now a version of the machlokas, again, between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, like we had at the top of the Amud, but here now we have a Braisa, and this is Rabbi Eliezer HaKafer's version of the machlokas. Lo nachluka Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, nol kishu amal shetzarach latif bimena dam bris. There is no debate whatsoever that there has to be a tafa. You have to extract blood, even though the baby is born with a milah. The only question is, can I violate the Shabbos? So Beit Shammai says you can be Mechal Shabbos, and Beis Yosef says you cannot be Mechal Shabbos. Now, if all I had was this Braisa, look, the Braisa over here, according to Beis Yosef, says you can't override the Shabbos. So where do we go with this Braisa? So where we go with this Braisa is that this is one man's view of the Machlokas Rav Elazar Kafar. There is an implied Tana Kama. Now, in this Braisa, we don't see the Tana Kama, but there's an implied Tana Kama. So we know that there's another version of the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel that's not stated in the Braisa, but deduced from the Braisa. So, lav mechlal de Tana Kama saver mechal na lav es haShabbos. So, it must be now, we know there's a Tana Kama viewpoint, and we know the Tana Kama viewpoint differs from Rebbe Elazar Kafar, and now the Gemara is suggesting what's the Tana Kama's viewpoint? Everyone's in agreement, both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, that the baby that's born with a milah, you have to do hatafas dan bris, and you must do it on Shabbos. So all this proves Rav Yosef's point that there is an arla, and it's a suppressed arla, and it's not a doubt, it's a fact. So im kein Rav Elazar kafar time to beishema asal hashmi'inan. So the Gemara says that's very difficult because now look at the totality of the picture. Well, now you're basically, the way you're framing it, there's a debate between the Tana Kama viewpoint of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel versus Rav Elazar Kafar. And all this speaks to the idea that what Rav Elazar Kafar is doing is he is clarifying the viewpoint of Beis Shammai. And that's all Rav Elazar Kafar is going to do? Meaning he's going to step forward and say, no, that's the viewpoint of Beis Shammai, that's not the viewpoint of Beis Hillel. Meaning, why do we need clarification in the viewpoint of Beis Shammai? In other words, we acknowledge the fact that Beis Shammai is Beis Shammai, right? You can't dispute that. But a later Tana is not going to come along, and all he's going to do is, oh, here, let me help you understand the position of Beis Shammai. That doesn't make any sense. So Dilma Hachikamer, the Gemara says, no, well, maybe what Rav Elazar Kafar is trying to say is, lo nechluku Beis Shammai Beis Hillel b'davar zeh. He's not just clarifying the position of Beis Shammai. Perhaps what he's saying is that on this issue, on giving a mila to a child who's born gemalt on Shabbos, meaning hatafas dan bris on Shabbos, there's no debate. Meaning Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel both agree that you can do it on Shabbos. Okay, where do we end on all this discussion? So basically, now here's our conclusion. Bottom line, the baby's born with a mila. Okay, no, in other words, no arla. Right, about 6 years ago here in our community, we had it. So the baby's born without a milah. So do we do hatafas dan bris? That's question number one. So according to one viewpoint of the Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, no. In other words, not even hatafas dan bris. That's one viewpoint. That's not the accepted viewpoint. The accepted viewpoint is that of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, which is that we do hatafas dan bris. That is the minug. Not the minug. That's a halacha. Right, that is a halacha. But however, it's why do we do a tafas dan bris? Because perhaps there's a suppressed arla. In other words, it's an arla, we just don't see it. But on this view, on this issue, however, we follow like the viewpoint of Shmuel. And on this issue, we don't say that it definitely is an arla kavusha, but only that there's a possibility that there's an arla kavusha, and therefore we do not do the hatafas dan bris on Shabbos. We will wait till after Shabbos in order to do hatafas dan bris. Okay. Yeah. Small incision.
So what did they do for the child here in this community? They did it?
Yeah. Amar Rav Asi kol she'imo t'mei leida nimol l'shmona. V'chol she'inimo t'mei leida einimol l'shmona. So the Gemara over here notes, Rav Asi says that there's going to be a correlation between mom and the bris milah occurring on the eighth day. Now, we know there's a mitzvah to do the bris on the eighth day. That's pretty clear. The Torah couldn't be any clearer about it. However, Rav Asi says, but there must be another variable in order for the baby's bris to be on the eighth day, and that is whether mom is a Tamei Leida. Now we know, right? Masech Tanida, we spent a couple of parakim talking about it. Third parak, fourth parak, thereabouts. So we know that once mom gives birth through a natural delivery, so then mom becomes Tamei, she becomes Tamei. How long is she going to be Tamei for? If it's a boy, it's 7 days. If it's a girl, it's 14 days. And then she's going to go through a lengthy a lengthy residual tumah period. For a boy, 33 days. For a girl, 66 days. Okay, but in other words, mom's going to be tameya. Okay, that's a given. If it's a natural delivery, Rav Asi says is that the mitzvah of the bris for the baby is going to be always in force. However, the mitzvah of giving a bris on the eighth day, that's only going to be when mom is tameya leida. However, but if mom, however, is not tameya leida, so then the baby's bris is not going to be on the eighth day. Now, if all this confuses you, meaning how in the world, it's great trivia, it's not trivia, it's today's daf, how in the world can mom have a baby, deliver a baby, and mom not be tameya leida? I mean, she just gave birth. And the answer is, good, and the answer is mom had a C-section. So if mom had a cesarean, so then, mom's not tameya leida. Shenem Aisha ki sazriya v'yalda zacharu tameya. Over yamash mi yamal basar laso. And Rav Asi says, and how do I know this? I know this based on the connection of the psukim. Open up the chumash at the beginning of Parshas Tazriya, very first psukim. A woman who has been seminated and has a child. So on the eighth day, you're going to have a bris. So that is the argument of Rav Asi. Very interesting. You don't find this that often. This is just a parenthetical note. You don't find that often. Meaning, this is a drasha made by an Amora. I mean, it happens. Don't get me wrong. But usually you find the drashas made by Tanayim, Brisas, Mishnayos. But they have an Amora over here making a drasha. Anyway, the...
He's not basing it on anybody?
He doesn't quote anybody.
To Rabba, who was also an Amora,
but okay. Amar Avasi Kol Shimo Tamei Leida. Okay, good. So the Amar Le Abaye. So Abaye says Ravasi can't possibly be right. Doros Rishonim Yochichu, because let's go back to the earlier generations. We know that the mitzvah of Mila happens to be one of those mitzvahs that we had even before Matan Torah. Okay, I mean it was given to Avram Avinu. So Shein Imo Tamei Leida. Venim olishmona, meaning go through all those generations from Avram Avinu until Matan Torah, and what do you have? You have all these women who are giving birth, natural delivery. There's no tumas leida. Now, how do I know there's no tumas leida? That's very easy. There's no Torah. The Torah is not given, so there's no tumas tahara. So there's no tumas leida, and yet we give a bris on the eighth day. Eighth day because Kadosh Baruch Hu told Avram Avinu. Give the bris on the eighth day. So the counter argument of Abaye to Rav Asi is, how can you be right when there were so many generations who had the bris on the eighth day, even though there was no tumas leida? V'nim olashmona amar la nitna Torah v'nitzchadcha halacha. Very important line of the Gemara. The Gemara says, yeah, but we know what happens when the Torah is given? Refresh. It's a total refresh. Now, when the Torah is given, it's chasha halacha. The halacha now becomes a new halacha. Those who listened to Rabbi Benavicki, he just gave shir. I mean, we saw this not that long ago, although I'll say now it wasn't that short ago either. Right? The Mishnah in Chulin that talks about the mitzvah of Gidon Asha. There's a Rambam over there in the Parasha Mishnayos. And the Rambam says very clearly, and I mean, our Gemara really speaks to this idea, that even though there were some mitzvahs that were given before Matan Torah, but we don't do them, writes the Rambam, because they were given to us before Matan Torah. Right? Bris Milah, Gid Hanasha, these mitzvahs are not enforced. We are not bound to these mitzvahs because they were given to us before Matan Torah. We do them because they were given at Matan Torah. And our Gemara really speaks to this idea very clearly. Meaning, you're right. Generations prior to Matan Torah, so there was Bris Milah. But that's not why we do Bris Milah. We don't do Bris Milah because Avram did a bris. We do it because Matan Torah, because it was instructed at Sinai. So if that's true, so now, it's not a question at all on Rav Asi. Rav Asi's position is very defendable, where there's a connection, there's a correlation between the bris occurring on the eighth day and the Tumas Leida. Even if the Gemara says, "Ah, v'ha'id ma yosi dofen amishiyish lo shtei areles Rav Huna v'Rav Chia v'Rav Chanamar mechalan alav as a Shabbos v'Chanamar ein mechalan alav ein mechalan." So the Gemara notes that there's a machlokus between the Amorayim. If you have a cesarean or a baby born with two arelos. I'll come back to that in just a moment. That's what I was asking yesterday. So a baby that has two arelos. So you can... So there's a machlokus between the Amorim whether or not you can be mechal Shabbos. I cannot plead yelach chalavas Shabbos. So here the only debate is whether or not there's chal Shabbos. But aval shmona vada mehalan lo. So Gemara suggests, but isn't there a full agreement that I do the bris on the eighth day? And the Gemara says no. Haba hatalia. It's the machlokus about whether or not you do the bris on Shabbos is actually the same machlokus in terms of whether or not I do the bris on the eighth day or I do it on the. Or I don't do it on the eighth day. So the Gemara notes that no, the it is subject to a machlokas whether or not there's a correlation or there is no correlation. Okay, so what comes out from our Gemara over here is very clear, is that according to Rav Asi and another Amora as well, you could choose, it's either Rav Huna or Rav Chiya bar Rav, if the baby comes out not through natural delivery, but via cesarean section through the stomach, so that the mother is not subject to tumas leida, and therefore the bris does not occur on the eighth day. Now it's interesting; the Gemara doesn't say which day it is. Meaning, if it's not going to be the eighth day, so what day is it? Any guesses? How about day one? How about day one? Meaning that now we're not. In other words, there's no mitzvah to do the bris on the eighth day. Presumably, would be. Right, we do it at the earliest available time, so presumably it would be day one. The
What about the idea that the woman had to go to the mikvah so they could celebrate?
Okay, I mean, that's an idea, but I'm saying, but you have the mitzvah of a bris.
That was only expected the year for the eighth day.
Correct.
Dangerous for a baby?
Just 1 second. Let's just go back for a moment. There were two cases that were brought up in this braisa. One of them I explained, which is Yosei Dolphin, that's Cesarean, and one of them I did not explain. Somebody, a baby is born with two arelos. Now, what exactly does that mean? So it's not clear. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi gives two explanations. Shtei arelos, shnei or zel zeh. So one pshat that Rashi says is that there are two arelos, one over the other. And that's, in other words, if that's true, then I'm not really following what the issue is. Meaning, why is it then that we'd have a question as to whether or not you can be Mechal Shabbos or you're not going to be Mechal Shabbos? So maybe, which one's the real Arlo?
Right.
Okay, and the other one would be a Chabura.
Right.
That's very good. Okay, two, that's very good. The Amri Lashne Gidden. And then Rashi says, or maybe the case of Shtei Arelos says that they're actually two Gidden. Now, if that's true, so it really speaks to a pathology, which I it's strange, but I spoke to my medical advisors yesterday, and they said, look, in the world of pathologies, and literally anything can happen, and it's possible. Baby could be born with two Gidden, and then I guess we'll explain it the same way, meaning we don't know which Gid is the actual Gid, and which one requires a Mila, and it's assumed that only one of them require a Mila, which I guess is an assumption, but if that's true, then on Shabbos, you're making a chabura on the other one. Okay. The practical halacha, by the way, which Moelin out there, they know, they don't know. It's you think you're a Moel, you should know these things, but the Moels out there, you should know the following. The baby's born on Shabbos, but the baby's born on cesarean, the bris is not going to occur on Shabbos, on the following Shabbos. The first question, as a Moel, right, any Moel in training, I'm not a Moel, by the way, I hope you know that. Okay, I did Mila, but even that, I say it boldly, I had the Moel standing right next to me, he set it up, it's not that difficult. Usually, I understand, you need a bit of a stomach for it, but okay. Anyway, but as a Moel in training, the first thing you need to know as a Moel is that when the baby's born at Shabbos, your first question to the parents are, well, how did the baby come out? I know it's a personal question, but it's okay, you're a Moel, you can ask that question. How did the baby come out? Did it come out via cesarean or did it come out natural? Because if, in fact, it came out cesarean, now you're not going to do the bris the next day. In other words, you'll wait to the eighth day, but you're not going to do it on Shabbos, on the following Shabbos, even though the following Shabbos is the eighth day. Because as we just learned in the Gemara, there are two opinions in the Gemara that says that the bris is not taking place on the eighth day. And so therefore, according to those two opinions, you don't have a right to override the Shabbos with this bris. That's what you need to know. The first thing you need to know is the Moel. How the baby came out. So, Kitzenai. And now the Gemara notes... Okay, we'll start this. And now the Gemara notes that this is subject to a machlokes tanaim. Okay, and now it's gonna this next discussion. Yeah, I figured this next discussion over here is gonna be a little bit elaborate. It's gonna be a little bit complicated. Okay, we'll start it on Shabbos tomorrow. But basically, it's going to be you're gonna see throughout this next part of the Gemara that whether or not the baby born out not via natural delivery but through via cesarean, it's going to be subject to a machlokas tanaim whether or not such a baby can override a Shabbos or not override the Shabbos. In other words, is the bris going to take place on the eighth day or not on the eighth day? So we'll see that. So again, today we finished up our discussion of washing the baby. Halacha does in fact follow like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, which means he washed the baby on Shabbos itself, and even if the third day of the baby post bris falls on Shabbos, you wash the baby in hot water, which the Gemara was very clear. It means that you can even heat up the water on Shabbos itself. Then we moved on to discussions today about Safek. Safek, for example, whether the baby is born day month 7 or month 8. Safek, whether or not the baby is a male or a female. Safek, meaning whether or not the baby was born with a already gamalt, but whether or not there is a suppressed arla over there. So we dealt a lot today with all these cases of Safek. And the final discussion we had today was a discussion of, is there a connection between mom being a Tamei Leida and the bris occurring on the eighth day? According to Rav Asi, yes. And if the baby were not to come out through a natural delivery, but rather via cesarean, so then the bris does not occur. The bris isn't on the eighth day, which means for sure that you will not be violating Shabbos for such a baby. The Gemara's conclusion is Hava Atalia. Okay?
The
common denominator through all these cases are cases of death. Okay, Adkan, we stop over here. Continue with Refuah Shlema for Binyamin Zeva Kohen Ben Sharon Rivka, for Rafael Zaka Avram Ben Yakir Abigail, and for Ilu Nishmas Eliyahu Ben Yitzchak. וחנאי מן הקשמה רצה קשבח וזעק וסוף פיך אחר בן תורה מצו שנאמן נאי חפץ למנסיקו יגדיל תורה ויעדיר.